I want to begin with a word of thanks to you, the church, for asking me to assume this position as interim pastor. There was a time this week when I wasn't sure I would be able to be here on this very first Sunday. Thursday, when I was here, I felt a little scratchiness in the back of my throat. Friday morning, I waked up with a full-fledged sinus infection, so bad that I wondered if I would even have a voice today. So I thought I'd better try to get an appointment with my doctor. Friday afternoon, I was able to get in to see him. My doctor is Jewish. He's Orthodox. He wears a yarmulke to work every day. And for 20 years, he's always taken a great deal of interest in my work. So the first thing he said was, "How's the church in Worcester?" I said, "Well, I have concluded my ministry in Worcester, and with your help, I will start as interim pastor at First Baptist Church in America in Providence this Sunday." I reminded him that this was the place where Jews were first welcomed into New England. And he is very interested in hearing about how things are going here. But he said, "What are you going to preach on that first Sunday?" I said, "23rd Psalm." He said, "Ah, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." That's the place to start. And he's right. That is a great place to start. I suppose I should remind you that I am not Dan Ivins. Those of you who are visitors here may not know that Dan Ivins retired a few months ago after serving as pastor here for 8 years. I've had the pleasure of knowing Dan Ivins for 45 years, since we were in seminary together in Louisville. And I am sure that you would agree with me when I say that there is only one Dan Ivins. He has been a wonderful friend and, I think, a wonderful gift to this church. Now he's retired down in the mountains of Tennessee where his accent sounds normal. Now you've asked me to be your interim pastor, which makes me wonder if you are slowly trying to wean yourselves off of Dan's mountain accent. You see, I grew up in South Mississippi, but I have lived in New England for nearly 30 years, and my accent has gradually moved up the eastern seaboard. I think it has probably reached Maryland, maybe Delaware by now. So if you could get used to Dan's accent, mine will be easy. Now there's one primary reality that stood out as I considered what to preach in these summer months. That is that this is a church in transition. And transitions are always a little scary. They involve a certain amount of uncertainty. Who will be our new pastor? Will I like him or her? Will it be a him or a her? How will things change? It can be an anxious time. So I thought, what part of the Bible do we tend to turn to in anxious times? Answer, the Psalms, of course, the Psalms. I thought, what if we spent the summer constructing our worship services around the Psalms, the favorite Psalms? I would start with the 23rd, which is likely just about everyone's favorite, certainly the most familiar. That way, when Linda asks you to suggest other Psalms, the 23rd would already be taken. So I've taken your suggestions and I've planned a summer of Psalms. Next week we'll focus on Psalm 100 and we will continue on until the Sunday before Labor Day thinking together about favorite Psalms. I hope that one of these Psalms, one of these Sundays, will be your favorite Psalm. And perhaps you'll discover the richness and depth of a psalm that may be less familiar to you as we move along. The psalm selected for each Sunday of the summer will be published in the next church newsletter. Now, I've called Psalm 23 a psalm for transitions. Why? Because it refers to every life transition from womb to tomb. Think of how it starts. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down. Now, when was the last time somebody made you lie down? You know, when I think of it, I'm not sure, but I think this may be the only time in the entire Bible when God makes somebody do something. God seems to be in the freedom business, giving people freedom to make decisions. But here, he's making somebody lie down. Are any of you able to remember your parents making you lie down for a nap? I'm not sure I can remember that far back, but I do remember making my own children lie down because parents know when children need a nap. And a child might be kicking and screaming, but you make the child lie down to take a nap because you know the child needs a nap. And so all that kicking and screaming and crying, suddenly, boom, just like that, gone. They're just gone. They conk. So the psalm starts there, when we are young. Then it transitions to still waters. Still waters. When all is well, you're young. You have the world by the tail. Your health is good. But it doesn't stop there. It continues on to transition into paths of righteousness. Those paths can be fulfilling, but they can also grind you down over the years. They can make your hair turn gray. When you walk long enough on the paths of righteousness, you start to feel a pain in your knee and in your lower back. And steps aren't quite as easily climbed as they were years before. Then the psalm transitions to what is called the darkest valley, the valley of the shadow of death, which could be just about anything. It could be death. It could be broken relationships. It could be disappointments. It could be a lost job or a devastating disappointment. Whatever your darkest valley, this psalm promises that the Good Shepherd will be with us through it. Then the transitions continue until we get to the house of the Lord. For how long? Well, this is where I fall back on the old King James Version. The modern translations say something like, I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long. Well, that's just not good enough. This is where I really prefer the King James Version. I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Forever. I'll take the old King James Version and this one. Thank you very much. When I was in the fourth grade, I was required to memorize the 23rd Psalm and recite it in class. And I can well remember sitting on the green couch in our living room practicing it to my parents. He maketh me lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. But what could I, as a 10-year-old boy in the 1950s, imagine what life would bring to us in the last decades of the 20th century and the first decades of the 21st century? How could I have imagined? But like those old gospel hymns, this 23rd Psalm took root in my soul. And like many of you, it continues to live deep down in the soil of our soul and in our heart and brings comfort and joy to us in the most difficult of times. Now, here's a little known secret about this psalm. It has radical political overtones that should resonate in a place that still lives in the shadow of Roger Williams. Here's the clue. It was common in that day for nations to refer to their kings as shepherds. Not only did Israel think of its king as a shepherd, but also other cultures around the Mediterranean world used the same imagery. Some of the pictures of Egyptian pharaohs have them holding a shepherd's staff in their hands. Other cultures use the shepherd imagery in thinking of their own political leaders. Thus, the opening of this psalm may be interpreted as a radical statement of the separation of church and state. The Lord, not my king, not any other kings around me, and by extension, not the president, prime minister, the Pentagon, the chairman of the board, the CEO, any political party, or any other person or institution in human authority, the Lord is my shepherd. And ultimately, I will not be dependent on people in positions of authority to fulfill my deepest spiritual needs. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Now let us take one final step as we consider this wonderful psalm in terms of transitions. Have you ever noticed that there is a dramatic transition in the grammar of third person to the grammar of second person in the middle of this psalm? Now, you know what third person is. That's talking about he, she, or it. Puts things at a little bit of a distance. Second person is you. In the first three verses of this psalm, the writer is like a professor describing God in the third person. He makes me. He leads me. He restores me. But then look what happens. The writer takes a walk through the valley of the shadow of death. And suddenly, it is no longer third person. God is no longer at a distance. There is a dramatic transition to the second person. I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. There comes a moment in our lives, perhaps when we have been walking through some dark valley of death or illness or regret, when we transition from third person description of God to second person direct address with God. The task of a university department of religion is to talk about God in the third person. There are experts in religion, biblical studies, theology, comparative religions, ancient languages, and the psychology of religion. That's all good. We need that kind of study of religion. But it's third person. And the classroom is the place for it. But the task of the church is to take all of that third person knowledge and help people transition to second person direct relationship with God. Christian faith only becomes personal and real when we make that transition. We live in a culture enamored with third-person knowledge about religion. There's the feeling that if we can know a lot of facts about a religion, then we can know the religion. We are a culture of experts. But there is a qualitative difference between an expert who learns all there is to know about religion and the humble person who speaks directly with God because of a personal relationship with the divine. Big difference. It's a kind of intimate relationship expressed in this psalm, "For thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." So during this time of transition, I hope that in spite of the fact that it inevitably carries with it a certain amount of anxiety, that I can commend this old psalm to you, this old familiar psalm, with its tried and true promises. It has stood the test of time. It remains contemporary today, and it will live on to bless our children and our grandchildren and all those who follow. I hope that somewhere in our life of faith, we all make that transition, that dramatic transition, from talking about God to talking with God in a direct relationship with God. So that we can all truthfully say, "I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me."